Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, the host, coming to you from Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin, precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service located at 3201 North Division Street inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044. That's our local number. If you're outside the area, toll-free, and you still have a landline, I think that's probably an antique anymore. That's a toll-free number, 877-827-2646, or through the website at coinsplus.com. We have our old previously recorded radio shows there. We've had kind of a gap. As I've been out of town, you guys have been listening to a few reruns. There was about a year ago, there was a situation where I had a really bad ice situation at my house. It just had built up, and it was pushing water in the basement. And I spent the entire night till like 6 in the morning with a huge steel rod chipping ice. It was terrible because I was obviously protecting my house. And I made the mistake. I was up all night, and I'm like, I'll just go to work. Well, I was super tired that day, and I had a radio show that day. And then that night, I did the radio show, and then on top of my stupidity, the room that I do the show in, the studio, can be very hot. And a lot of times I need to turn on the AC. Well, a couple times I've had all-nighters. It's part of being self-employed with a bunch of other interests going on. And so that day I like was literally dozing off on the show, and people were like calling, freaking out, thinking I was having strokes and stuff, which is bad enough and embarrassing enough. So then when I was gone with all my father's ailments, who was in the hospital, accidentally the radio had reran that old rerun apparently numerous times. And it was probably it was hands down the worst show I've ever done in my life. And they apparently reran it a few times is what I was getting calls from people that knew me while I was back in Montana, and I didn't quite understand. And they thought, you know, so anyway, then just recently here, it ran again. So we had another phone call, but just wish I could get that thing in the garbage. But anyway, so for those of you that a while ago thought you heard me falling asleep again, it was just a rerun. So that was like my worst experience, and hopefully that show will never show up again. So that's that. But anyway, we've got a new year ahead of us. It's an interesting year. I'll tell you, there's a lot of interest I have in numerology. And numerology is very powerful stuff. When you get to God, you know, the design of us, the earth, the universe, the heavens, everything is explainable in numbers, which is why when people say, I don't believe in God, I believe in science. It's like, folks, first of all, science is created by Christians. Long ago. The purpose of science is to hypothesize. It's to create a theory and then test that theory. You have a hypothesis. You think you know what's going to happen, and you test it. But the thing is, you have to have a double-blind study. The study has to be done in such a way that you cannot affect it. It's called the scientific method, okay? And what we have going on now is modern science, if we want to call it that, uses a prediction, and then they want to push it through. So basically, what the scientific theory or what the scientific method is they formulate a question, you know, based on a specific observation. Why is the sky blue? And then you make a hypothesis that, well, maybe the sky is blue because there's water involved or whatever. And then you make a prediction, and then you test that theory, and then you analyze the results. It's most important that you maintain absolute, you know, a lack of bias in the testing. You have to have external review. You have to have replication where it comes up over and over again, etc. And then they get into scientific inquiry, beliefs and biases. You know, they have the scientific method. There's four elements of the scientific method or iterations that make it work. It's characterizations, which is observation of measure, you know, measurements, whatever. Hypothesis, that's where you theorize what you think you're seeing. You predict A plus B causes C, and then you'll conduct the experiment. So basically, when people go, I don't believe in God, I believe in science, all they're doing is observing what God already did, proving it true, and then the part I don't get is they make this leap of faith. Well, if I understand it, it can't be God. And it's like, wow, to me, that's where they lost. That's where you lost me. It's like, so they can observe all these unbelievable, inexplicable, phenomenal, ridiculous things on Earth, which, I mean, I really am as baffled as I say I am, folks. I'll tell you how weird I am. This morning, my wife caught me looking at pictures of microorganisms on my iPad, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, check these things out. And she's like, what is that? It's the most scariest, disgusting things you've ever seen. These little monsters. Terrifying. Big, sharp teeth like piranhas and just terrible. And she's like, were those, you know, small like lice? I'm like, no, they're super, super, super microscopic. Like you need an electron microscope to see it. Folks, we've got life all the way down to the absolute most minuscule level. I don't understand how God made it. Does that blow your mind? No. And you know what's interesting in the Bible? It says, yeah, he created all this, he created all that, you know, and then he created man to go, wow. But, you know, there is so much life around us. It's so in depth. It is so deep. And it is so thorough that it is, we don't know how God created it. I think we can all agree on that. I think when you get into things like the seven-day creation and all this stuff, folks, I'm going to take something away from you and you're going to get mad at me, the people that are the 6,000-year-old earthers, okay? There is nothing in the Bible that says this. Number one. And number two, when you have the days of creation, and trust me, I'm no evolutionist, but when you have the days of creation, you got to understand, how are days measured? Days are measured by our orbit around the sun, okay? Now, there was a period of time, obviously, when maybe things were a little more haphazardly scattered before God really hammered down and made things, okay? So when we go to Genesis 1, we read, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So basically, in the beginning, God created the universe. Boom. How, when, where, we don't know. But I will tell you, however the time was, which we can't even measure because you can't, I mean, if we were ever got to the point where we could send a spaceship clear into outer space to the point where people would be on it for 30, 40 years, you can't measure things in days and hours because days and hours, I mean, if you have an atomic clock, you kind of can, but then you have to correct, adjust and correct for the approach of the speed of light. So if you're traveling in outer space, the closer you get to the speed of light, the more you need to correct, the more time slows down for you, I guess is what I'm saying. And let me, I got to type something here. Lower thermostat. Okay. So, and we know that from the laws of motion, or the, anyway, E equals MC squared, whatever Einstein had. So basically, as you approach the speed of light, the faster you go, the more time slows down for you, and time continues where you left. So, for example, if you went into outer space, if we created a spaceship that could just use planetary acceleration, and it left the Earth and went through to Alpha Centauri, which is the closest singular star system to us, 4 light years away, and we continue to accelerate, and which is easy to do when you're outer space. There's absolutely no friction or resistance. So all you need is the most minute, minuscule release of pressure behind that ship to maintain a constant state of acceleration. When you're on Earth, because of friction and gravity and all these other variables, you have to use more and more and more power. That's why there's like this, you know, they call it, I think, the Atlanta Project, where they have from Area 51, they've witnessed a jet that goes around the Earth in 3 hours, and it uses this pulsating explosion, because the faster a jet goes, the more fuel it needs to burn, and the hotter and harder that thrust needs to be. When you're in outer space, that's not the case. Whether you are going 1,000 miles an hour, 10,000 miles an hour, or 100,000 miles an hour, which you obviously wouldn't measure by miles an hour probably either, the same amount of pressure release will continue the same rate of acceleration because there is no friction. So a ship that's heading towards Alpha Centauri that just has a small nuclear engine that just releases the equivalent of, say, the air coming out of a pop can when you release it, or you guys know, you've seen those air cans, you can spray a little air can. If you could release that amount of pressure out of the back of a full-size spaceship in outer space, it will continue to accelerate and continue and continue and continue. And you could have a small plutonium engine. I mean, there's nuclear power really is the answer, folks. 99 out of 100 scientists that are energy specialists say, and that's actually true, it's not, you know, 3 out of 5 dentists choose dentine gum. It's actually 99 out of the 100 experts around the world on energy say nuclear power is the key. We've been brainwashed and lied to about it, and there's just a lot about it. But with that, we could travel beyond your wildest dreams. And as we approached, if we went towards Alpha Centauri and just continued to use a mild amount of energy to accelerate the whole way, and then use planetary acceleration once we're there. And what planetary acceleration is as you approach planets, the way God set up gravity is it actually operates like a slingshot, where you kind of get sucked in by the gravity and you blow out the other side going even faster. So if we had a spaceship that went there, went through and turned around and came all the way back in, say, 20 years, by the time they got back to Earth, Earth would have aged about 300 years. So that leaves us with the dilemma of, if there was space travel to any extraordinary extent before the flood, you know, when those people came back, they wouldn't know where to land. We've got tectonic plate shifting, and not to mention the fact that people wouldn't know they're coming back. And there's been discussions about some of these alien ships that have crashed. And, you know, there's all kinds of supposed government secrets that have been held back. And I do believe some of that's true. But by the time you got back after a 20-year journey, you would be looking at an Earth that was over 300 years newer or older, and no one would know you were coming back. So, you know, essentially, that's that. But I don't even remember why I got on that track. But I can tell you that the creation, I guess, of God, just the absolute magnitude, oh, the fact of time, the effect of time on the biblical account of creation, there's is something that we don't comprehend. And that, folks, I will tell you that most of your quote-unquote unanswerable questions about God are really come down to the fact that God is outside of time. I mean, and you really got to put your head to that concept for a while to realize time doesn't exist for God. He created it for us. Light and gravity affect time. That's why if you enter into a black hole, they say you can go backwards in time. If you accelerate to the speed of light, you'll catch up to yourself. That's why if you accelerate to half the speed of light, you literally have a decrease in time. Time and light are one. God is light. You know, it's just, it's a lot to comprehend. But as you approach the speed of light, time slows down. And so when you think of the initial creation and God's dispersing light everywhere at all times, he is creating time at that point. Boom, light and time are one. And so for us to measure how long this or that took doesn't make sense. We do get light from planets or stars that are 20 billion light years away. Does that mean I think the universe has been here 20 billion years? I think maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's not really relevant because it's not the same measurement. The original creation is not done in the same measurement style that we would use. We're very simple. We are one of maybe 6 trillion stars, and our star has 9 to 10 planets, depending on how you count them. That's one star out of 6 trillion, and we're using the revolutions of our planet around the sun as a measuring tool for time. I think you understand what I'm saying. So, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, so that, it's simple enough, like I said. He created the universe. Then, so now we know at least that there's a universe, there's planets, there's stars. Frankly, very possibly different than what we see today. We know there's been motion in the stars and skies, and we know there's evidence of craters. We know we've seen comets and asteroids, and we have an asteroid belt, and we see evidence of severe explosions that have affected the surfaces of Mars, the moon, etc. So there's been changes to that. We don't know when or why. There's different scripture references to, you know, wars in the heavens between Christ and Lucifer. And I personally believe that when Lucifer, Satan, found out about man's redemptive quality, the ability to harbor both good and evil, the only creation God had ever done, and then combining his justice with his mercy, I think that made the devil mad, because I think the devil was God's most beautiful creation. He was probably God's center of attention. I think that there's a possibility, there's people that say that the devil had authority and power to create at a certain level, that maybe that's where the dinosaurs came from. There's people that argue that the dinosaur structure of the body was not, it couldn't carry its own weight around. And if you look at the actual makeup of some of them, it kind of makes sense. However, when you consider in the fact that the Bible says that there was a firmament above and a firmament below, and you suddenly add in even double the atmospheric pressure, increases the oxygen content by 4 times and all this. And all of a sudden, if you have a higher atmospheric pressure, everything becomes lighter and easier to move, and which could explain, too, why the dinosaurs were able to move like that and live the way they did. Because in today's atmosphere, it appears that they would not be able to function properly. And I kind of agree with that. So when we get into the creation account again, where I was going is, so God created the heavens and the earth. the earth was, then the very next thing, which is in Hebrew, there's a word now, the earth was formless and void. It means at a distinct future point, at a specific future point, the earth was formless and void. Those words are tohu and bohu. They mean utterly destroyed, devastated, wiped out, completely over, hurt, broken, chaos, calamity hit. Something bad happened, okay? So the earth was formless and void, and it was over, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. So the earth was dark, possibly covered in water. It sounds like there may not have even been mountains sticking up over the earth. It could have been just a, you know, a dark planet in outer space. There's a possibility that something had happened. There's a more than a possibility, because the words in Hebrew say it was destroyed. So when you get into God's timeline, he says, look, I made the heavens, and then we jump forward to this planet called Earth. After the earth had been destroyed and it was in chaos, or it was just devastated, dark. He had let it rest. We don't know if there had been, you know, everything had happened. It was struck with meteorites. All whatever life he had here before us was destroyed. Everything had settled down. And the earth was now at rest in the dark. And God fast forwards and says, now let's go to this planet called Earth. And he says, then God said, boom. Actually, the boom's not in there. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. That's the boom. So you've got the universe created. We don't know the amount of time that had passed, but we have a pretty good idea that this part here was about 6,000 years ago. When we do the chronology and the you know, all the studies of the age of people before the flood and after and all that, we are looking at about a 6,000-year-old Earth. Now, if that's what you mean by a 6,000-year-old Earth, you're right. But it's 6,000 years since God remodeled the Earth. It was, you know, it was used for something before. And there's scriptures in Jeremiah and stuff that refer to a level of destruction far beyond anything we've seen, where there was no life, no man, no nothing. It basically sounds like a nuclear wipeout of the entire planet. So something bad happened. Something bad happened to Mars as well. There's evidence that I do agree with, that there was civilization up in the Cydonia region. And there's good arguments that, you know, the Bible says that Lucifer walked among the rolling rocks of fire, rolling stones of fire, which means the planets, that he moved up and down. And then when something happened, he was cast profane to the earth. Something was taken away from him. In some of the old Jewish Jewish scriptures, even like the book of Adam and Eve, it says his light was removed from him. So he lost. That's when he got ugly. He can't appear as an angel of light, but he is no longer the most beautiful creation God made. And people will refer to him as if he still is. So he can make apparitions and appear a certain way. But in according to the legends in the book of Adam and Eve, that when Adam kept being tempted by the devil, and he was very naive, and he kept falling prey to these temptations. And at one point, I think it was one of the some of the archangels held Lucifer temporarily so that they could somehow remove the apparition he was creating and let Adam see him. And it said it so sickened Adam to see what the devil really looked like without his light that he couldn't eat for 40 days. He was so sick from the image that was stuck in his head of who the devil was that he couldn't even stand it. So he's stuck here somehow. He's stuck here. I don't know why. We know, I mentioned the other day, God created good and evil. It's all God's. It's not an accident. It's not that God created good and we created evil by disobeying him. Evil existed. That's why he gave us the tree to eat from, the knowledge of good and evil. How can God say, here's a tree with the knowledge of good and evil, if he hadn't created evil? It just doesn't make sense. So the earth at this point is formless and void, tohu and bohu, utterly destroyed. So I literally believe that I personally believe there's a possibility. We're talking the universe had been in existence, by our measurements, maybe 20 billion years. And it's God's time. We're the great grand creation. We are the culmination as far as we know. We are the crescendo. We're the creme de la creme of his creation to this point. Everything else has been created specifically for his glory and to glorify him. But the most glorifying thing to God is when a free will being that has been exposed to good and evil chooses him out of complete free will and faith, with nothing obviously visible to us, and we choose to be with him for eternity. That is the Almighty, Creator's greatest accomplishment. So the earth is without form and void. Darkness moves over the deep. God says, boom, let there be light. God saw the light was good. Tov, T-O-V-B, the same word he uses to describe gold, which is very interesting. And God separated the light from the darkness. So that's the first thing he does. He creates light. Then he calls the light day, the darkness he calls night. So from a pragmatic perspective, perhaps the earth was overcome with darkness, kind of a basaltish, nasty, rocks, and just really jagged and filthy with a lot of water. And God at that point says, let there be light. Light exists. Perhaps he parted a dark cloud covering, something to create light. Or perhaps the sun finally came together in its form, maybe gravitationally. So, maybe there's things that he does over time, or maybe there was, a large amount of whatever, and he just instantly turned the sun on. For us, from a scientific perspective, it's like, he could have gathered all these different items and pressed them together until the pressure was at a certain point and certain gases were formed and elements released and they ignited. And, however he did it, I don't know. But he turned on the lights. The first thing he did, he walked into a devastated place and turned on the lights. It's like you think of the universe as, a huge city, and the earth is one little house in that massive city that had been devastated from a bad, serious accident, fire, devastation. It'd been sitting there, it was dark, and then somebody comes and they hook up the wires and they flip on the lights and they say, okay, now we're going to renovate this place. So the second thing, then God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters and let it separate the waters from the waters. So we had water on the earth. So God is beginning to separate the waters. He's starting to put things back together. He's remodeling. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. And that's important, folks, that you understand that he created a firmament above. And it goes on to say this. It says, God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning, a second day. Then God said, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. So basically what I think is, if you've ever seen like acetone and you try to put it in a bottle, it runs out the lid unless you have a special bottle. It eats up rubber. It eats up plastic. You have to have glass and you have to have a special lid because it's so molecularly thin that it escapes. It is right by the boiling point, okay? So acetone's constantly evaporating on Earth. Why? Because it is so close to its boiling point. It's at the point where water is like 210 degrees. It boils at 212. And it's at that point you're going to see steam coming off. Well, you're not going to notice steam coming off of acetone. But based on atmospheric pressure, which is huge, and temperature, other elements present, all those things, temperature is affected by distance to the sun, All those things affect the behavior of water. So if you have no atmosphere or a very, very light atmosphere, water's going to behave like acetone. Acetone will run, it'll splash over things, it doesn't stop. It doesn't have surface tension or turgor. Water has surface tension or turgor. Water has incredible properties, but those that are unique to it because we need it, but those properties are also only present under the exact circumstances, the exact atmospheric situation that Earth places it in. And so when he says he separated the waters and said, you stay here and you stay there, that is when God placed a certain level of atmospheric pressure, in fact, higher atmospheric pressure, and a specific bandwidth of temperature. Because let's face it, if it gets too cold, water freezes. If it gets too hot, it boils. Now, as you lower the atmospheric pressure, the boiling point of water gets lower and lower and lower, and it becomes less cooperative. It won't bond and adhese, and the turgor goes out of it. So the atmospheric pressure of the Earth could have been much, much lower, in which case water was misbehaving. It wouldn't stay where it was supposed to. It was splashing everywhere. If you reduce the atmospheric pressure to the verge, like Mars lost all of its water. We know it had water. There's evidence that that planet had massive oceans and seas. And people think, well, that's just the way God made it. No, folks, there is a history out there, especially our solar system. There's something special that happened here. You know, Lucifer was around. There's another time that we might know about someday, but right now we just don't. But the point is, you can absolutely see the existence of water that used to be on Mars. And people say, oh, you know, that's all put there by the explosion of many comets that were full of water and they melted and a bunch of la-di-da stuff that doesn't make sense. First of all, if it hits there, it has to thaw. And then once it thaws, why would it literally run all around the planet, pole to pole, latitude to longitude, hip to hip, whatever you want to call it? It just won't happen. There was a long, prolonged period of time where water existed on Mars. The other thing we found now from testing is in the remaining basins of these old lakes and seas, the deeper we go, the more the salt we find. So we know that with saline water, which is very hygienic, it's very conducive to life. And it also, as it evaporated and got lower or rose and fell, you always get the higher concentrations of salinization down low, so that the sides of the basin of the prior lake or ocean shows that water was on Mars for a long time. And so when God says, you know, basically you stop, you know, waters, first he says what? Let the waters below the heavens gather in one place. Or before that, he does an expanse. And then he gathers them into one place and makes dry land appear. So now water's starting to behave. It's starting to behave the way which is necessary, right? Then he calls the dry land earth and gathered, and the gathering of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. So basically, there's so many different options of what could have gone on. He could have brought landmass up out of the water, because we do know, we do believe, it appears there was what's called Pangaea at one time, which is one single solid landmass on earth. And then that broke after the flood, I believe, because the Bible says in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. And we can wind all the continents of the earth back, and it's not straight, it's a circular motion because of the centrifugal force of the earth and all that. You've got the earth spinning while the tectonic plates are coming apart. They're gonna also spin slowly as they come apart. You can wind it back together and you end up with one central large body of land, which, by the way, is centered by the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. So you're basically seeing a very biblical monument there. It's the center of the landmass of all dry landmass on earth, which is another conversation for another day. I believe it's the cornerstone of the earth. I believe it's relevant to the fact that it's never had a capstone on it, and Christ said the builders rejected it. It's a representation of the New Jerusalem. So anyway, when God created dry land and he made the waters behave, or he consolidated them into certain locations, he could have brought up Pangaea. He could have brought up this new landmass and centralized it. And then later on, it broke up. It could have broke up, and that's as we get different nations and they fall apart, you know, or they separate, which over time means if you go back thousands of years, it's very possible that many of the treks across bodies of water was much shorter, which could also explain some of the migration we see around the earth. And we're like, there's no way they could have boated across the Pacific Ocean. Well, there may have been a time that it was no problem as the tectonic plates were shifting thousands of years ago. And as the Bible says that Peleg was, his name was specific to the fact that the earth was being divided at that time. So we've got, you know, God says the land is earth, the waters he calls the seas. So whatever happened, I believe water's behaving, land mass is starting to rise up and come out. You know, again, we can't be bound. We never know what's going on with time. First day, first phase, you know, and trust me, I'm a Bible literalist, but the only measurement we have for time is the revolution of our earth around the sun. Well, if that's not occurring, what's a day to God? And guess what God says? A day to him is what? 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day. So, you know, I think what he's saying there, he's outside of time. So don't get hung up on that. You can't be losing faith. I was talking to someone that's so confused on this stuff, and they've got a pastor that is telling them 6,000-year-old earth, go easy. He's like, fight to your grave for it. And it's like, why? It makes no sense scientifically. It doesn't mean everything to do with our faith, folks, has got to be confirmed biblically, and everything biblically has got to be confirmed scientifically. And I mean, it is. You doesn't mean you're going to be able to prove it, but I guarantee you, you can, because everything written in that Bible is truth and fact and right. There's nothing. Now, I'm not going to tell you that this, when the sun stopped for a day, that you can scientifically explain that. But I can tell you that when they wind back the cosmic clock and you go back X number of thousands of years, you can do this. When I was in physics of astronomy in college, and I took way too much of it because I loved it, you can go back and say exactly where a star was at a certain point in time. It's a great historic clock. When we find old drawings of constellations that have one star that drifts, we can see where the placement of the constellation was and know exactly when it was drawn. As a matter of fact, on Mars in the Cydonia region, they've got a layout of what they think are old pyramids that have been devastated by whatever happened, and they're in the exact same pattern as the three pyramids of Giza in Egypt are. And Egypt, you know, the pyramid region is all based on the names of Mars and so on. Except for there's one pyramid that's up high, and it essentially when you look at, I can't remember if it's constellation Orion or whatever one it was, but as you see where that constellation was at the time and you count the clock back, it places the creation of those pyramids on Mars about 17,000 years ago. And they're massive. The Cydonia region has a face that is about a mile long and a half mile wide, that is half man and half lion. Well, the Lion of Judah, half man, half God. Lion represents God. There were lions all over the Temple of Solomon. We know at the Great Pyramid of Giza, what do we know we have? We've got the Sphinx, a lion, and the pyramids. We also know that the face of the Sphinx was removed, and we don't know exactly the whole story about that history or who built it or when. And it's, you know, everything about the creation of the Great Pyramid is so far beyond magnificent. It is a divinely assisted or inspired, or who built it, we don't know. The cornerstone of the earth is what some believe it is in the book of Job, where God said to him, where were you when I built the cornerstone of the earth. So God had the dry land appear and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and he said it was good. Then he said, let there sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind, and God saw that it was good. There was evening and morning, a third day. So next thing he does is he blasts the earth with vegetation, and I believe that it hit fast. How he did this, we don't know. He might have literally, you know, spoke it. We know that, but we just don't know what that looked like when it took off. But we know that trees came up right away. You know, people that believe there was a time frame there, I don't know. I really don't know. But whatever it was, whatever he did to instill life into the earth, that's what got me on this topic initially, if you recall. It is everywhere. There is living organisms everywhere you step, everywhere you walk, every breath you breathe, every square millimeter of your home. There's life everywhere. God put it everywhere. The earth is literally covered in it. And to the point where if there are heavenly beings that have been to other places throughout the universe and they came here, it would probably be overwhelming. It's why the earth is such an important place. If you don't think it is, why does Jesus say he's going to rule and reign from here for 1,000 years and the New Jerusalem's coming here, etc.? There's something special about this place. I don't think God's building New Jerusalems for planets throughout the solar or the universe. I just don't believe it. I believe that this is a very unique place. So we got the earth bringing forth vegetation with seed so it can start reproducing. That's the third day. Then we've got God saying, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. So basically now all of a sudden we've got a view of the heavens. So either the earth is forming at the same time as the heavens, or God's, you know, he's finally put the expanse, the firmament up, which by the way in Hebrew means solid, firm. That's why it's called firmament. It's a solid water-based shell. And maybe all of a sudden we can magnify and see. We don't know. Maybe there has been, you know, gases throughout the universe that were blocking the visibility. We just don't know. But something happened. So all of a sudden, now all of a sudden at night, you're going to see the stars. You're going to see the moon possibly. God placed in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. It says, well, God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night, and he made the stars also. He placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. So that's another interesting concept. You've got where he says that you've got the sun in the day and the moon at night, evening and morning, a fourth day. But he says God placed them in the expanse of the heavens. He's talking about the lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on earth and to govern the day and the night and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw it was good. The placement of the sun and the moon, folks, is so incredibly scientific. You have got to combine the radius of the sun, the specific chemical makeup of the sun, the rate of combustion of the sun. And now I don't know if you guys are familiar with the fact that the sun's operation at this point in its life is contrary to the second law of thermodynamics. It's not reducing power. For every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. It's only transferred. All these things. The sun at this point, as far as our calculations go, is a nuclear reaction, but it is putting out more energy than it should be able to. It's putting out more energy than what our mathematical calculations say it even is capable of doing. There's something very special about that component of God's creation, probably because we can't really examine it firsthand because we'll get burned up. But the point is, the distance of the sun from the earth is so perfect. The angle of our orbit, the ellipse of our orbit is perfect. The axis of the earth being tilted 5 degrees is perfect because as it spins, it causes things to move and it keeps things from becoming stagnant or breaking. Instead of having, if it's perfectly upright, you have just a more constant pull on the earth. But as you have a tilted axis, I should say a constant pull on specific parts of the earth. With the tilted axis, as it revolves around the sun, that the pull from the gravity of the sun and the moon is constantly working against each other at different angles so that it's actually moving the earth. It's keeping things flowing and it's keeping it healthy. It helps the waters under the earth also to function properly as well as the waters on the earth. It's just so scientifically unbelievable. But the size of the sun, the distance, the angle of our orbit, the size of the earth, the color of the earth that has a certain level of refractivity, the thickness of the atmosphere to capture just enough heat but not too much heat, and then the moon to keep it all in balance. The moon keeps the waters moving. If it wasn't for the moon, the earth would become a stagnant leech pond. The tides are a way of cleansing. It brings water up and out. It affects evaporation. It cleanses the earth. Water is very cleansing. And so that's why we have so much life on earth. And what comes with life? Death. And what comes with death? Decomposition. We have an entire earth that is filled with dead organisms, organic material that is constantly decomposing. But because of the system that God created, it cleanses itself continuously, which is why when they get into this global warming stuff, it's a lie. If you go up into the, you know, higher atmosphere, even below where jets fly, 25,000 feet above sea level, and you take air samples above the oceans, above open, clear areas of Earth, there is absolutely zero evidence that we have any impact on the climate, but they will never tell us that. Then they make it politically incorrect to even discuss these things, to say, hey, maybe global warming doesn't exist. Maybe we don't have a carbon footprint. And all of a sudden you become evil and you become anti-Earth, anti-Mother Nature, anti-Gaia. So the light, and of course the light put out by the moon affects all kinds of things, and you've got, you know, the activity in the oceans, and it just, when you get it all together, it's just an absolute miracle. I will tell you this. So you got the waters. Then the next thing he did, he separated the light from the darkness, and he saw it was good, evening and morning. Then he said, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures and birds fly above the earth and in the open expanse of the heavens. So now we're all of a sudden, we've got fish and birds, which is ironic because they do, you know, they do have, they're symbiotic. They need each other to survive. I guess it's not ironic. It means that God might actually know what he's doing. So, and it says that they're flying above the earth. And then he created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarmed after their kind and every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. So God basically is, you know, he continues to create. He's starting to create life. So we got evening and morning and fifth day. Then we got God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after their kind. And it was so. So he makes the beast of the earth after their kind. In other words, that you never see cross species transfers when they talk about evolution. There's no evidence of it ever. And the cattle after their kind, everything that creeps on the ground after its kind, and God saw that it was good. So he's basically saying he made these land-dwelling species after everything else was in place for them to eat. For, you know, mammals do create waste and gas and all kinds of things. But he had everything in place to tolerate that immediately. So he gets everything ready. Everything's ready. He's created this amazing place, this phenomenal, incredible creation, first and foremost. Then he says, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Then it says, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, and created them. We know that's coming next. But the point is, when he said, let's make him in our image, God is God. We have things like him. We have free will. We have the ability to create. We have all these things. But when he says our image, we know that he is present with or, you know, around something else like him. His son, we know that. People say, well, it's the Holy Spirit, or it's the Trinity. Well, the Trinity is something we've named it. We know the God, Father, and Holy Spirit are all important aspects, but God said our image. So we know that when we get to heaven, there's going, you know, God's going to have some type of form, some type of structure, and there's going to be other creatures or beings that somehow share in that structure. And he says, let's create them in our image. He is obviously conversing with somebody else. And it isn't man because he hasn't created man yet. So God's conversing with someone up there as he does this great creation. And he wants man in his image. And then, of course, he gives man a woman to fulfill him. So it says he blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and fill the earth and subdue it. And what? Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So he gives man his greatest gift of all, which is woman. Some men might disagree with me there. But in its purest form, marriage is very fulfilling. So he does this, and he tells them that they rule over everything. And Christ has parables. We rule over everything. The earth does not rule over us. The problem, folks, is this, that the people that call themselves ecologists and conservationists, they worship the creation instead of the creator. Very clearly discussed in Romans 1. We are to worship the creator, and he gave us this magnificent, unfathomable, incomprehensible domain that we are responsible for. As believers, you should be the greatest conservationist of all, but you're doing it because it's a gift from God. Christ used the examples of vineyards and things like that when the master leaves. We are in control of this earth. We oversee everything. We should not lose our jobs over spotted owls. So he tells them to multiply and to begin to inhabit the earth. Then he said, behold, I've given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of the earth, every tree which has fruit yielding seed, it shall be food for you. So originally God's creation, food, plants were good. They were all good for food, good, all of them. Now we've got man falls, things become broken, we get decomposition. And all of a sudden, we've got weeds and we've got all kinds of plants taken over that are not good for food. And to every beast of the earth and every bird of the sky and to everything that moves on the earth, which has life, I have given every green plant for you. And it was so. So God gave him domain over everything. And then he said, God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and morning, the sixth day. So God at that point went on to the seventh day, and he basically rested. He said, it is good. He doesn't do that anywhere else in the Bible where he says, it's good and I am done. It's complete. Earth is done. Now the whole process takes place, which we are currently involved in. And so, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, folks. I talked about numbers at the beginning. I got off that a little bit. But I'll tell you what, real quick before we close out. The number 44 in the biblical numerology. Now, Obama was the 44th president. Well, first let's do 45, Trump. Biblical numerology, meaning of 45, it deals in reference to maintaining, preserving, and protecting the things that mattered the most. Trump's name is a final overriding factor or resource. So think about it. There's something in a name, and there's something in a number. Trump is, according to his name and the biblical meaning of the 45th president, he is the final overriding factor or resource that deals in reference to maintaining, preserving, or protecting the things that matter the most. He's biblically ordained. 44, the president before Trump, means things that bring about a worldwide divine judgment against humanity. It also, the number 44, I was doing some research here also, and I don't have time. It's when bad things happen. That's when Christ had his last, he had final part of his ministry was 44 days. And then what? He was crucified. And, you know, it ended the day he gave his final instructions to his disciples. We don't have time for that right now. But basically, folks, the 45th president from a biblical perspective is a meaningful slot or position. I didn't even get to talk about the shooting in Fort Lauderdale today, another tragedy. I don't have time to discuss it, but it's going to end in more gun control and more security at the airports. You can call us at 444-0044 or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. Time to roll over, roll out. Give us a call. Let us help you balance. Take care. God bless. Thanks. Bye-bye.